Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 24th. Experts see gains in tackling seismicity. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Earthquakes continue to shake up the Permian Basin, with 2-3-magnitude events felt in Midland last week. Ted Wooten, chief engineer with the Railroad Commission, stressed that his agency is taking the issue seriously. Quote, "Collaboration between the Railroad Commission and industry is deeper than you realize," he told attendees at the Permian Basin chapter of the Society of Petroleum Engineers Permian Basin Energy Conference on Wednesday. Part of a panel discussing the issue, Wooten predicted his department will be making recommendations for changes to water injection rules, including injection volume reporting, in the near future. "The region is seeing some success in reducing seismicity," said Katie Smy, associate research professor at the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin and co-principal investigator at CISR, the Center for Injection and Seismicity Research. Quote, "The rate of 3-plus magnitude earthquakes has fallen from a peak of 40 per month in 2021-22 to 20 per month in 2024, she told the audience. "This success is due to changes in regulations and operations as operators have switched from deep water injection to shallow water injection, shut in some injection wells, and reduced pressures and volumes in others," she said. But she cautioned that earthquakes of 5-plus magnitude still occur and have increased in some areas of the Midland Basin. Researchers have also observed increases in pore pressures by up to 1,000 psi in shallow injection strata in the Delaware Basin, Smy said. To address the issue, quote, "We need more data," said Cody Comiskey, an earth science advisor within Chevron's MidCon business unit's Applied Reservoir Management team. "Policy and regulatory changes and operational changes will also be needed to address seismicity issues. In addition," quote, "we need to think of the scale of the solution. It's all of the above approach. Some options will be better than others, but we need to look at all options," Comiskey said. "I do believe we can solve the seismicity issue with collaboration," stated Jeffrey Thompson, Senior Director, Geophysics at Oxy USA. Thompson listed 3 proposals to address seismicity. Short term, he said, recycling should be emphasized where feasible. Intermediate solutions include moving injection wells away from high-pressure areas. The long-term solution is promoting beneficial reuse, he said. Quote, "We will be producing 20 million barrels of water per day for the next couple of decades," he said. "I do think we can do it. It will take effort, but it is something we can achieve," end quote. Midstream companies are part of the mix, said Annan Pasco, vice president, subsurface at Deep Blue. She said reservoirs need to be better understood so the industry can make good decisions. Some midstream companies are pushing technological advancements, she added. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, U.S. Geological Survey had reported 11 earthquakes of all magnitudes in West Texas that day. The largest was a 2.5 magnitude quake about 60 miles east of Midland and 25 miles southeast of Big Spring. agency redefining event marketing in West Texas. The story was written by B.K. Richter. When Jeannie Van Doren Truong first came to West Texas, it wasn't with an immediate dream of starting and co-founding her own business. In 2017, she started at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, and from there, her career moved in another direction. Quote, after kind of hitting some milestones career-wise, with Wagner Noel from celebrating the 10th anniversary, expanding the marketing department, and a few other things, I felt the need for the next challenge career-wise, she told the Reporter Telegram. And so opening up my agency is really what spoke to me, and I got the blessing from my boss over at Wagner Noel. End quote. From there, she leaped into becoming a full-time co-business owner of Backstage Event Marketing and said it has been fabulous ever since. Quote, I primarily focus on marketing events, so getting people to come to the events. However, I do have quite a bit of experience with event planning as a whole, she said. Part of the secret recipe for major event planning, according to Van Doren Truong, is being mentally prepared for being able to go with the flow of an event. Quote, because never have I ever planned an event that went exactly as it should, she said. I feel like oftentimes it's easy to get discouraged because you put so much effort into something that only lasts for 2 or 3 hours, and you have been planning this event for 3 to 6 months. End quote. Thus far, Van Doren Truong said that one of the largest events that she helped bring to fruition was a Jimmy Buffett performance for the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center's 10th anniversary concert in 2022. Quote, that was about 18 months in planning as far as securing talent and then also all of the kind of side activities that we did, she explained. We did 10th anniversary swag and had special little side events throughout the community that we participated in. We also had a huge media day to kick off the 10th anniversary with a free concert. So, in some ways, it was like creating an event for an event with our kickoff announcement that Jimmy Buffett was coming, she explained. Part of what keeps Van Doren Truong motivated to remain in the industry is the last part of the event. Quote, I always say it's important for anyone planning events to stand up by the doors as people leave because you can thank people for coming, and typically that's when you get the most praise for the event, she told the Reporter Telegram. And that's precisely the part she enjoys hearing the most, audience members saying thank you for bringing in a certain artist or performer to the Midland-Odessa area. For challenges, she says that marketing a new product can be most difficult. Quote, sometimes there's a crossover for target demographics, and sometimes there's not. So being able to create an event around the event has been kind of where my secret sauce lies, because I want people to come and enjoy and make those events a part of their lives, she said. For the Permian Basin, where entertainment is in huge demand due to hungry audiences, Van Doren Truong said that we are in the middle of many stops. Quote, the fact that we are fairly centrally located by the interstate to many of the major cities is super helpful, she said. And I think that the only drawback is that sometimes we'll get some of the larger-scale entertainment on a weekday. End quote. In the future, Van Doren Truong said she plans to launch digital courses on how to do event marketing. Quote, I've had quite a few people who have asked for help, and I don't necessarily have the time to help everyone, but what I am hoping to accomplish is to teach people, she said. I hope that I can kind of do a one-to-many approach and be able to teach those who are interested in creating events for their business how to market it and get people to show up and make it profitable." End quote. A recipe for success. Brent Tomasco's culinary journey flourishes with Cadillac Rose events and catering. The story was written by B.K. Richter. When Brent Tomasco came to Midland and began Cadillac Rose events and catering, he had already ventured into the food industry. For him, it seemed like a natural progression on the path that he was meant to be on. Quote, "My mom pushed me into working at a young age," he recalled. "She just seemed to push us, that is, myself and my brother, into the restaurant environment. I think for two reasons. The hours were flexible, but I was a bit of an introvert as a kid," end quote. Tomasco said that even though he played on all the sports teams as a child, which he credits as helping him break out of his shell, the food industry broadened his horizons regarding his social skills. Quote, "I started working when I was 15 or 16 and did it throughout college, and it just progressed from, you know, being a busboy in a bar. Then I had the opportunity to own a restaurant in Dallas coming out of college, so I took that opportunity and did that for a couple of years. That was more or less not the most successful venture, but you know, it brought me to Texas, and I realized that there were a lot of financial opportunities here," end quote. He says that the Permian Basin was a bit of a learning experience due to it being unlike any other place that he's been in. Quote, "Midland is one of a kind," he told the Reporter Telegram. "I had to relearn how to manage some of my employees all over again, especially with the fact that we are in an oil town. You know, jobs are abundant," end quote. While Tomasco admitted that COVID-19 put a dent in his catering business, he still moved forward with his overall business plan. But at one point, he also decided to return to school and obtained his commercial driver certification. Quote, "From year one to year two, we doubled," he said. "I don't know if that pace is going to continue, but we are running right along," end quote. Tomasco said while his business serves everyone, they truly do it all. Quote, "We will do different marketing tactics to appeal to the mass crowd, but it ultimately comes back to just being fully hospitable," he explained. "We even do all of the bartending services, and we cook on-site. We also do plated services on-site," end quote. From concerts to fundraisers, Tomasco said he and his staff have catered to a variety of events. A large percentage of their business is also catering to oil fields. Quote, "It's an entirely new set of challenges, besides just cooking and having more traditional catering," he said. "You are just worried about making sure the food's at the right temperature and you're getting it somewhere on time and getting set up on time. The rig sites are often the cooking sites as well, so you are dealing directly with the elements," end quote. The elements in West Texas include 50-mile-per-hour wind gusts or even rain. Quote, "Often you are on a lease road and your navigation is telling you to go one direction, and it's 3.5-hour venture from the home base to there," he reflected. "So those things are very difficult," end quote. Another factor is dealing directly with the oil crews. Quote, "The oil crews have a priority of reaching their goals and whatnot, so oftentimes we're trying to time our food in unison with a crew that does not necessarily have a stop time," Tomasco said. "We try to be real flexible in that capacity where, you know, we ensure that the food that we are providing them is hot and fresh for their liking, end quote. Tomaska admitted to not being familiar with the oil industry before moving to Midland. However, he says that he soon found a newly founded appreciation for the crews that he cooks and prepares food for. Quote, everyone is always really appreciative, which came as a bit of a shock, he said. They are the nicest people to cook for, hands down, going back to when I was helping bus tables at a neighborhood restaurant where most of the people knew me as a kid. These gentlemen and women, for that matter, are always nice, and that helps. That helps big time, end quote. Often, Tomaska said the catering business revolves around not only just one event, but multiple events during the same time. Quote, next Wednesday, we are doing burgers in New Mexico for 500 people, he said. On that day, we have two other catering events here in Midland, end quote. It's a very quick turnaround time, and the density in the meal preparation is also a factor. For menu options, Tomaska said having a range such as Italian, Mexican, and barbecue helps significantly. Quote, that helps us when we are returning to a rig maybe 3 or 4 days in a row. The workers are not going to see the same thing twice, he said. He said that having the ability to travel with the company's ovens is another major benefit. Quote, we have got our trucks, our trailers, our barbecue trailers, charcoal grills, tents, tables, chairs. We essentially have everything, he said. The most often item that is used is our barbecue pit flash smoker. That's our most trusty piece of equipment, end quote. While the equipment that comes with catering to the oil fields and other businesses in Midland is vital, Tomaska credits his staff and his employees as being the most valuable part of his business. He credits his lead chef, Juan Maldonado, as being a longtime contributor to his business. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 24th. Clyde James Jim Marler, age 77, passed away on October 19th at his home in Kermit, Texas. He was born in 1947 in Sweetwater, Texas, to Clyde M. and Ethel Pauline Marler. Clyde married Janet Reed on August 5th, 1967 in Monahans, Texas, and they shared 57 wonderful years together. Clyde was first and foremost a devoted husband, father, and grandfather. He was known to be an outdoorsman with a love of hunting and fishing. He was preceded in death by his parents, Clyde and Pauline Marler, and sisters Patsy Woods and Barbara Marler. Clyde is survived by his wife, Janet Marler of Kermit, sons Brett Marler of Liberty Hills, Texas, Colby Marler and wife Sarah of Midland, sisters Rosemary Churchwell and husband James of Midland, Twinkle Lefkowitz Marler of Odessa, as well as several grandchildren and a great-grandchild. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 25th, at the First Baptist Church in Kermit, Texas. In lieu of flowers, a memorial donation may be made to First Baptist Church of Kermit, 400 East Bryan Street in Kermit, Texas, 79745. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Services Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family at www.fs-fp.com. Mark Anthony Gosh, age 71, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, October 16th. A memorial service is set for Saturday, October 26th at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements have been entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Filiberto Hernandez, age 84, of Midland, passed away on October 21st in Midland. A viewing will be held on October 24th at 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held on October 24th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home's crematory in Midland. Dana Lewis, age 62, of Midland, passed away on October 15th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, October 24th. Adams Bernal under investigation. The Texas Department of Public Safety's Texas Rangers are in the midst of conducting an abuse of official capacity investigation within the city of Odessa. Earlier this month, the Odessa American filed two open records requests with the city of Odessa after receiving tips that complaints had been filed against Assistant City Manager Agapito Bernal with Human Resources and City Manager John Beckmeyer, and that Equipment Services Director Chris Adams had been misusing his government-purchased card. On Tuesday night, the council took no action after going into executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of Adams, who was hired by the city in June 2023. On Wednesday morning, the Odessa American was notified the city has asked the Texas Attorney General's office for a legal opinion on both of its requests. According to a letter sent to the AG's office by City Attorney Dan Jones on October 18th, the requests were tied together and the release of the information would interfere with the detection, investigation, or prosecution of crime. The city has a legitimate interest in preserving the secrecy of its records from the eyes of defendants and their counsel in criminal actions, Jones wrote. He further stated the city's internal auditor is still investigating, and the city of Odessa will need to gather all evidence for the Texas Rangers, and the premature release of information may hinder their investigation. It is in the city's opinion that Exhibit B and Exhibit C are related to Texas Penal Code, Penal 39.02, Abuse of Official Capacity, Jones wrote. Jones then provided a definition of the crime, which notes the offense can be a misdemeanor, a Texas jail felony, or a third-degree felony, depending upon the circumstances. According to the Penal Code, a public servant commits an offense if, with intent to obtain a benefit or with intent to harm or defraud another, he intentionally or knowingly, 1, violates a law relating to the public servant's office or employment, or 2, misuses government property, services, personnel, or any other thing of value belonging to the government that has come into the public servant's custody or possession by virtue of the public servant's office or employment. In a second letter dated October 18th, Jones informed DPS's Assistant General Counsel that the OA has requested information about Bernal and Adams, and he sought an opinion from the AG about the release of such information. Jones noted the information sought by the OA include records we received from you or from your company. He also informed the lawyer she can also object to the release of the documents, but must do so within 10 days of receiving his letter. Since he was hired, Adams convinced the city council to create its own tire shop and to purchase fuel equipment so city employees can fuel city-owned vehicles. Both measures, he said, would save the city money. Adams has also been named in a lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court against the city of Southern Tire Mart, which alleges Adams has hostile feelings toward the company and as a result the city has intentionally violated Texas law by purchasing tires from a competitor over the last year. The lawsuit alleges Adams falsely claimed STM double-billed the city for more than $180,000, but did not retract that statement despite being shown documents disproving it. Ector County Commissioner Don Stringer also emailed Beckmeyer back in August that Adams was using a city-owned vehicle to drive back and forth to his home in Lubbock, thus violating a city policy. Emails obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act show Beckmeyer told Adams to stop using the vehicle to commute. Council blasted over TGAA contract bathroom ordinance. The Odessa City Council meeting Tuesday night was a contentious four-hour affair, with arguments springing up over an inland port, the TGAA contract, and some Eastside roadway improvements. Members of the public also repeatedly called the council out over the contract, a proposed bathroom ordinance, and campaign tactics. The council spent 70 minutes alone discussing a proposed amendment to the city's 1989 ordinance regarding the entering of city-owned bathrooms by members of the opposite sex. The council ultimately voted 5-2 to approve the amendment, which limits the use of city-owned public restrooms, changing rooms, and locker rooms based on an individual's birth sex. Council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez voted against the amendment. The council spent considerable time listening to out-of-town attorney Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values, who spoke about the growing number of municipalities and school boards that are working on similar ordinances because, he said, they are afraid of the federal government and the Biden administration's agenda. Sines was followed to the podium by several members of the LGBTQ community who decried the ordinance, saying they are not a threat to anyone. There is no reputable statistical evidence that transgender people commit violence or sexual crime any more than the general population inside or outside of bathrooms against children or adults. Gail Norris said, in fact, evidence indicates trans people are far more likely to be the victim of violence and crime than the perpetrators. Alexander Ermels, president of the Midland, Texas chapter of PFLAG, called the ordinance a complete waste of the city's time, money, and resources. Odessa has real challenges. We should be tackling things that impact everyone's quality of life. Instead, we are wasting energy on where people go to the bathroom, Ermel said, noting he doubts law enforcement officers have the time to monitor the city's bathrooms. Bradley Burke said the ordinance is based on fear, but people should be more worried about the meth and fentanyl epidemic, drive-by shootings, and the homeless. I don't think that police should waste their time having to check everybody's IDs in and who's going into whose bathroom. I don't have that problem. We haven't had that problem. We won't have that problem, Burke said. It wasn't only members of the LGBTQ community who spoke out on the ordinance, however. Republican precinct chair Ronnie Lewis said he was astounded someone brought signs all the way to Odessa to talk about the issue and sharply criticized council member Denise Swanner for going so far as to point out she's married to a man on a campaign flyer. He also pointed out Swanner's opponent, Craig Stoker, has been attacked for being an openly gay man. Despite being repeatedly and falsely accused of going off topic by Mayor Javier Hoven, Lewis stuck to his guns. "What I want to know is where this stops," Lewis said. "Where does it stop? If y'all find out that a fireman might be gay, I'm on track. I'm not getting off track. If there's a policeman that has a gay child, where does this stop? Where does it go? If y'all got reelected, do you keep going? What is the stopping point of all this gay bashing?" Council member Chris Haney, who has angrily insisted he be addressed as Councilman Haney, said he loves everybody and fears no one. "There is nothing to do with fear. What I'm doing is putting protection out from my grandkids. I'm putting protection out from my daughters. I'm putting protection out for something that we should never have to go through in life," he said. He was called out by one of the speakers for saying any man who goes into the bathroom with one of his granddaughters won't come out. Roadwork. In other action, by a 6-1 vote, the council signed off on the performance agreement with DJK LLC that the Odessa Development Corporation approved on Monday by a 3-1 vote. DJK will receive roughly $7.8 million over time to make roadway improvements with curbs and gutters on property near Yukon Road and Mission Drive. They'll also make water and sewer improvements on the property, which is located in Ector and Midland counties. Prior to the vote, however, ODC member Tim Harry said he wanted to let the council know. He asked the Texas Attorney General's office to investigate a fellow ODC member who, for possibly violating the Texas Open Meetings Act. Without naming him, Harry said the member sent an email to the entire ODC board apologizing for not being able to make the meeting, but also asking for the compliance committee to look at the DJK agreement before it's being voted on. Harry said he believes that's a violation of the rules. He told Hoven they discussed the possible violation in executive session. Harry's action would also be a violation of the Open Meetings Act, as boards and councils are not supposed to discuss things in executive session that aren't noted on the agenda. City Attorney Dan Jones said Harry was right to approach the AG's office for an opinion. ODC member Larry Robinson told the council he did not think David Boutin was inappropriate. Rather, he just thought Boutin was making his position on the compliance committee review clear. Robinson noted he himself was against the DJK agreement. "I do not believe it is the intention of the ODC founders to spend our Odessa tax funds for the benefit of modernization of commercial tax-generating property in Midland," he said. When former ODC Vice President Jeff Russell came to the podium, Hoven remarked they were beginning to hear a theme, prompting Russell to shoot back, "Very professional, thank you." Russell then echoed Robinson's thoughts on the topic and questioned whether the money should be used on the project legally. Port. The City Council also discussed the possibility of buying land for an inland port Tuesday night, despite City Attorney Dan Jones suggesting the discussion be postponed. The ODC was supposed to decide Monday if they could spend $8.3 million to purchase property at 3215 West Murphy Street on an inland port that will be operated by Permian Basin Inland Port. The deal also called for $1 million to be placed in escrow. However, the ODC vote was postponed after some board members decided a new environmental study and a new appraisal needed to be completed. Harry insisted Tuesday night that all of the information that was needed to complete the deal was available, but it wasn't provided to the entire ODC board. He said he looked at a 300-page environmental study last month, and the land is clean. I want to point out that this is not okay. This is not what we're supposed to do. We are not supposed to be playing politics. We are not supposed to be playing games with this. This is a real estate deal, Harry said. We are not supposed to cost somebody a deal. This is a problem, and this has been going on since I've been on the board. Harry said he has been shined on by members of the Council of Commerce's economic development team. Robinson said the board didn't vote on the agreement because of the $1 million escrow figure because it is non-refundable. That is the biggest reason our board would not accept that. Not for these other things. We may not have been given all of the information we should have been given, but the board is working on the due diligence now to get that in the right way and to get it correct and approve it as soon as we can, Robinson said. Harry then interrupted and said, I wanted to point out that the problem is the lack of communication from our contractor, which is the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, and with that group, and that is a big part of the problem, that they have not gotten us what we've asked for. Robinson and Hovind then went back and forth, interrupting each other about what documents were or were not received and when. Robinson also questioned why Monday's special meeting had to be called. You are on the board. You need to ask that to your president and your board, not to city council. We don't set your meetings, Hovind snapped back. Hovind is up for re-election and facing challenger Odessa attorney Cal Hendrick. Secretary of State records show a Roger King is the registered agent for Permian Basin Inland Port, and campaign finance records show a Roger King donated $1,500 to Hovind's re-election campaign. TGAA. The Texas Government Accountability Association contract was also discussed Tuesday night. The City Council gave City Manager John Beckmeyer authority to sign an interlocal agreement with the nonprofit group, which has promised to help the city in its efforts to be transparent and ethical by creating policies and procedures. The open-ended agreement is $24,000 a year for years 2 through 5 and can increase at that time. In addition, it can only be ended if it's placed on a ballot and residents vote to do so. Since the agreement was signed, questions have arisen over potential conflicts of interest and the legality of the contract. Beckmeyer heard of TGAA through his longtime friend, Matt Armstrong, who is helping with the re-election campaigns of Hovind, and council members Mark Mata and Denise Swanner. Mata faces Odessa businessman Eddie Mitchell, and Swanner faces Meals on Wheels executive director Craig Stoker. Councilperson Steve Thompson told Beckmeyer he questions the legality of the interlocal agreement, since TGAA isn't a government organization, and such agreements are usually made between government agencies. He said he did not accept Beckmeyer's explanation that Odessa actually entered an agreement with the other city or cities that have to or will have agreements with TGAA. Thompson said it was also clear to him Beckmeyer began negotiating the contract before he had permission to do so, an allegation Beckmeyer denied. At one point, a clearly defensive Beckmeyer fired questions back at Thompson. Are we scared of any of our committees having to submit to the Open Meetings Act? Does it bother us that we're called for high ethical standards for the citizens of Odessa? Are we worried about these standards extending to all city bodies and elected officials? Beckmeyer said. Beckmeyer also said there's no world that would require me to sign a conflict of interest that said I knew this guy. when asked about the contract by Vasquez City Attorney Jones, initially said he wishes the contract said the city was entering into an agreement with other cities instead of TGAA. He later conceded Beckmeyer's point that the TGAA is made up of at least one other city, so the city was technically entering into a contract with the other city. Swanner led into Jones for not bringing up his concerns when they were discussing the contract and accused him of being wishy-washy. Republican Precinct Chair Dallas Kennedy pointed out TGAA didn't even have a board or bank account until well after Beckmeyer's signed the contract. He also said the group isn't even living up to its own rules since they've been lax about posting meeting minutes or videos. Lewis also took the opportunity to chime in, accusing the council of getting involved with TGAA and Beckmeyer's political buddies, without researching them and just because Beckmeyer recommended they do so. He later poked fun at Hovind by playing videos of two campaign workers who said they were brought in from out of state to campaign for Hovind, whose name they couldn't even pronounce. Thompson said he wanted to void the contract, but when Jones said that would land the city in another lawsuit, he backed off. Ultimately, Hovind formed a committee to look into the legality of the contract with him heading it up. Beckmeyer is also on the committee. In other action, the council gave Interim Utilities Director Alex Rolette permission to submit an application for a state-funded loan program through the Texas Water Development Board. The fund would be for the construction and design of a proposed water tower on the northeast side of the city. Gave Rolette permission to move $350,000 from the Pioneer Fund, which is comprised of mineral right sales money, to the Darrington Wastewater Treatment Plant to help improve day-to-day functions so that the plant will be able to continuously operate. Gave Finance Director Kylie Banda $3 million for various positions not included in next year's budget. The positions are in various departments throughout the city, including Equipment Services, the City Manager's Office, IT, Solid Waste, Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, Community Development, Solid Waste, Wastewater, Billing, and Collections. Agreed to go out for bids on waste and water projects because Eduardo Madrid and Associates has opted not to extend its contract with the city for the second time. Since January 2021, the company has worked on water and wastewater line replacement, fire hydrant replacement, and emergency water line breaks under the supervision of the city's utility department. Told Gallagher Human Resources they want employees' pay to be within the top 50th percentile when looking at competitors' pay, and to pursue a plan that would cost the city an additional $3.4 million a year. The council decided it couldn't spend $6.8 million a year to get employees in the top quarter. Bubba's 33 committed to thanking military heroes on Veterans Day. Midland and Odessa's Bubba's 33 locations will continue their annual Veterans Day tradition of welcoming veterans and active U.S. military to enjoy free lunch from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday, November 11th. Bubba's 33 is honored to welcome American heroes with a free meal. All veterans, including active, retired, or former U.S. military, can choose one of six entrees, including a classic cheeseburger, Bubba's Bacon Burger, Bacon Chicken Mac and Cheese, Grilled Chicken Salad, Chicken Tender Salad, or any 12-inch pizza, including a choice of any Coca-Cola product, sweet tea, iced tea, or coffee during lunch. Proof of service includes military or VA cards or just discharge papers. For veterans and active military unable to attend this year's event, their restaurant will distribute rain check vouchers good through May 31st, 2025. Bubba's 33 is located at 6153 East Highway 191 in Odessa and 315 West Loop 350 North in Midland. Obituaries: Leland Dwayne Walker Sr. Born on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 1956. Memorial celebration of life for Leland Walker will be held at Ward County Event Center on Sunday, October 27th at 1 p.m. Family, food, and friends sharing memories. 1525 East Monahans Parkway, Monahans, Texas, 79756. Ruby Jane Oates McGow. No services have been scheduled. Ruby Jane McGow Oates, 83, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 20th in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Clyde James Jim Marler. Clyde James Jim Marler, age 77, passed away on October 19th at his home in Kermit. He was born on January 18th in Sweetwater, Texas, to Clyde M. and Ethel Pauline Mallow Marler. In lieu of flowers, a memorial donation may be made to First Baptist Church of Kermit, 400 East Bryan, Kermit, Texas. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 25th at First Baptist Church in Kermit, officiated by Dudley Mullins. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Service, Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family at www.fs-fp.com. Bobby Manning, age 73, a local rancher of Gatesville, passed away peacefully in his home on Thursday, October 17th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 24th at Scotch Funeral Home Chapel in Gatesville. Interment will follow at Restland Cemetery in Gatesville. Scotch Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Full obituary may be found at www.scottsfh.com. Rodney Mann. Rodney Mann, 60, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 20th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. October 24th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery in Merkel, Texas at 2 p.m. Pastor Vonnie Taylor is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa. Pamela Jane McAfee. Pamela Jane McAfee, 76, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 17th in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. October 26th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Ralph William Lewis. Ralph William Lewis, 71, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 19th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. October 25th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor John Hendricks is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Paul Revere Gunn. Paul Revere Gunn, a cherished father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and friend, passed away peacefully at his residence in Odessa on October 18th at the age of 98. Born on October 12th, 1926, in Crosscut, Texas, Paul lived a life marked by love, creativity, and a profound sense of spirituality. A graveside service for Paul will begin at 3 p.m. Thursday, October 24th at Crosscut Cemetery. Food Bank seeking donations for North Carolina counterpart. There is still time to help the West Texas Food Bank in the effort to help its fellow food bank in Asheville, North Carolina, which was destroyed by Hurricane Helene. Libby Stevens, CEO of West Texas Food Bank, said they will be at First Alert 7 at Music City Mall, talking about the food drive and taking donations all day October 24th. They have been conducting a drive over the last couple of weeks, and for the next week or so they are still asking people or corporations for donations to help out the Manna Food Bank in Asheville. It is run by Claire Neal. Stephen said Manna is rural and covers about 9,000 square miles. She lost everything. They literally have a slab left and three walls. She had to find a satellite location. They've had a hard time getting electricity hooked up. They've had to get Amazon to get refrigerated trailers so that she has refrigeration for her products, Stephen said. She added that Neal has been doing distributions in parking lots and just wherever they can. They have been able to give out water mainly and MREs, meals ready to eat. Most of the people she actually serves are very rural, so they're up in the hills. She's had to find innovative and creative ways to reach those people, including things like ATVs, mules and donkeys, actually having to get supplies up to people because they are literally trapped, because roads and bridges have been completely washed out, Stevens said. It's a very hard, ugly, sad situation. She added that Neal does a lot of good work, and she knew if she made a call out to people in the basin, they would rally to help another food bank. We wanted to do an organized drive to give Claire time to get her satellite facility up and running and make sure we all have that goodies that we are collecting is put together in a meaningful way, because she really doesn't have a volunteer workforce right now because everyone's trying to just survive themselves, Stephen said. With that being said, we decided to do a 2 or 3 week drive and collect what we can, and then have a volunteer day for people to come and help sort and process and put everything in how it needs to be put together in emergency relief boxes and drive in and stock Claire's shelves for the first time in her new satellite facility, she added. People can still donate. Stephen suggests bottled water, Gatorade, sports drinks, food that have pop tops, beef jerky, protein bars, crackers, peanut butter and crackers, cheese and crackers, Clorox wipes, baby wipes, hand sanitizer, duct tape, tarps, mops, brooms, bleach, and trash bags. This is definitely more of a marathon than a sprint when you think what is going to take time to recover from this, she said. Stephen said they are also taking cash donations. ICA recently donated $50,000 each to the Food Bank and Red Cross for hurricane relief efforts. You can get on our website and click donate, and in the notes section, just put North Carolina or Manna, which is the name of the food bank, and we will make sure that gets to Claire immediately. Once we put everything together, we will be driving in and delivering it to Asheville, North Carolina, Stephen said. She added that the West Texas Food Bank is super excited about helping their food bank brethren. We've already had huge success when we've done this before. I go back to Hurricane Harvey and some other emergency situations, and we've always been able to provide assistance. We may be small, but we are mighty out here in West Texas. We also want to make sure it's organized. We want to make sure that things get there at the right time when people need them, Stevens said.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 24th. Man ready to begin new chapter without longtime wife. Dear Abby, I have been married for quite a long time, and I am seriously contemplating walking away from it. We no longer have anything in common. I'm active and hike, bike, play golf, and lift weights. My wife is 100% sedentary and wants no part of any of these activities that could keep us both healthy. It has taken a toll on her to the point that she has become obese and has mobility issues. Even a small amount of exertion exhausts her, which leaves me doing almost everything. I did not sign up to be someone's caretaker because she didn't take care of herself. For a long time, I have become friendly with a woman who is active and healthy like me. We have much more in common than just being active. She tells me she loves my intelligence and what a great career I had. I never received any support from my wife. I am tired of being a slave. I want a partner. Your thoughts? Signed, Fit in New York. Dear Fit, I think your marriage started failing before you met this active, health-conscious woman. As it stands, you are emotionally divorced before being legally divorced. Talk to an attorney, then tell your wife that you haven't felt emotionally supported by her for a long time, and that you want a divorce so you can be with someone whose interests and lifestyle more closely align with yours. From what you have written, I doubt your marriage could be saved by counseling because, emotionally, you have already moved on. Dear Abby, I am a single female in my 60s. I am very much a loner and mostly keep to myself. While I know my lifestyle may be unconventional, it is the one I choose. My concern is the possibility of dying alone in my house. I have serious health issues and don't expect to live a long life. I sometimes go weeks without contact with another human being, and if I should meet my demise, there's a very real possibility that I could go completely unnoticed for quite some time. I am not asking that you offer advice to fix my solitary life because, frankly, I accept it. What I would like to know is if there is a way, a service or device or something, that would alert someone in the likely event that I am alone when I meet my end. Signed, Flying Solo in Texas. Dear Solo, great question. If you have a newspaper delivered, your carrier would notice if they were starting to pile up on your doorstep. The same would apply if your mail carrier noticed your mail starting to accumulate. There are also apps and services that will check in daily with you to be sure you are okay. One I have heard about is the Telephone Reassurance Program. It is often a free service provided by a county's Department of Aging and Disabilities. Volunteers place daily phone calls to older or disabled adults to help them remain independent in their homes for as long as possible. If this isn't available in your area, check with your local senior center, AARP, or Department of Senior Services for recommendations. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.